In death situations where knives involved, there's a lot of blood flying around. I'd love to stab you right now, you'd stab me. The heart is pumping away then. There'd be blood splashing all over the place.
Yeah.
Funny enough, in a dead body, there's no blood spurts or anything like that. It congeals inside and forms part of the flesh in there and becomes like anything a butcher's shop. There's little or no blood.
Welcome to episode 30 of 13 O'Clock.
I can't believe it's 30 episodes already.
We say that every week, though. We can't be, and then I say that every week, too.
And it seems like, man, it's just like you get an episode done, and then you just have to make another one.
Well, yeah.
Like, you know, a couple days later.
A week goes by fast, and especially when you're as old as we are.
Yeah, when you become ancient, time is...
Relativity, just, yeah. Like time is like becoming compressed.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I'll do it next year.
Yeah. And then next year shows up and you're like, holy shit, that was like yesterday when we were saying that.
Okay, so what's the episode?
Well, okay, so we did Necrophiles last week, right?
Yeah. And don't talk about it.
And Tom is still okay. And Tom is still traumatized.
I can't. I'm not traumatized.
So,
I'm just mad.
Yeah, you
that's
are.
It, that's just
yeah,
it,
you are. Okay. Yeah, you are. It's so anyway, and then so I thought, oh well, maybe we'll do something more a little more lighthearted this week. But then we went and did serial killers, and then I thought of the two serial killers I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of up on like I like British serial killers for some reason because I lived over there for a while. And so then, like, when I started rereading about them, I'm like, oh, yeah, one of them was a necrophile, too.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, yeah. Like, you know, if you're kind of grossed out by that kind of thing, you can have 2 weeks in a row. We're just kind of like, oh.
Yeah, well, I don't know anything about either one of these cases, so I'm just going to ride along. Like,
and I told
audience.
You, I'm, like, warning you, like, don't.
It's
like,
always better when I'm kind of like the audience.
Don't, like,
don't
walk
really
out
them.
At the end again because I
right.
told you.
Okay.
Don't leave me carrying the show all by myself.
Yeah. And the serial killer shows are always... really popular, actually.
I like doing serial killer shows.
She likes doing them.
I'm into
she
that
likes
kind
doing
of shit.
Yeah, a lot of stuff comes along with them, though. You get the serial killer fanboys on there stunting about their knowledge. Oh, no, it wasn't the 12th. It was on the 13th that happened, you know. Got to understand that the sources for all this stuff kind of contradict themselves sometimes. The sources are not consistent. It all depends on who's telling you and what date it was and how up-to-date the information is and...
And honestly, it's
some
just
of
kind of a
you,
fun show. And it's like, I try to be accurate, but if I mess something up, I don't like to do more than one take.
Right.
Because I feel it messes the flow up. So like, if I mess something up, oh well, I mess something up. It's not the end of the world. It's like, you know, like I said, I think we mentioned it before, but we get like kind of all these stupid little comments, especially on the serial killer ones. Cause like, there's something about teenage boys, either physically or mentally, that are into serial killers that for some reason
cycles.
Are like, well, actually, you know what I mean? They go like that, and I'm just like, whatever,
this
man.
This is a free show.
You
guys.
Can be my kid. Shut up.
Yeah, this is a free
he
show, guys. You know, we don't even have a Patreon set up. You know, we do this basically for shits and giggles and entertainment. And you know, a lot of our podcasters are, you know, they're jogging or they're doing their walk or they're going to and from work, and they're killing time. You know,
yeah,
maybe they're laying in bed listening to it with their headphones. So, you know, this is not a block of instruction, you know what I mean? We're not trying to teach you anything, really. We're just talking about
we're
these
just talking
cases.
About shit we think is interesting.
Yeah, and it's kind
so,
of...
So, you know, and also,
so
you know,
and also
shout out to the person on the original Night Soccer video who told me to kill myself because of my voice. That was nice.
Yeah, right. Said that you had the vocal fry. Whatever.
Yeah, and I guess they were talking about me.
Man, they'll say all kinds of crazy shit.
Well, you know, one, I wanted to say, hey, you go first.
Yeah.
You know, then I'll do it. You go first.
That's just, you know, hey, man, that's what YouTube's about.
Do it.
That was
do
a YouTube
it.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a, that was
YouTube.
A YouTube comment.
Yeah.
Oh, and also I'd like to say, if you don't like my voice, don't listen to me. And go fuck yourself.
Oh! That's a good one.
Well, you know.
Okay, so.
It's my voice, sorry.
So what,
All right, so today we are talking about two. Oh, I wanted to. Oh shit! I forgot to mention Project Entertainment Network.
Okay,
Project Entertainment
gotta
Network.
Gotta
go to their Patreon. I'll plug them at the end too.
All right,
they're cool guys.
Okay.
All right. So today we are talking about two British serial killers, and we'll save the weirder one for a second. We'll save the weirder one for the end. And it's like I said, I lived over there for a while, so I kind of got into like I bought some crime books while I was over there, and I feel like. Maybe the British ones are, they're probably kind of well known over here and stuff like that, but it does seem like most of the documentaries and stuff about these guys are British. So I watched a couple of those and about each of the guys. But the first guy we're going to talk about is Peter Sutcliffe, better known as the Yorkshire Ripper.
And who's the second one?
The second one is Dennis Nielsen.
Okay.
Who is actually, I love his little appellation. They call him the Kindly Killer.
Oh, man.
Which, well, maybe you'll kind of see why, but in a way it's kind of like that weird Blackley comic ironic kind of thing, too.
Well, I don't know either one of them, so I'm just a little bit right.
Because that guy was a freakazoid. Well, okay. Actually, is a freakazoid. I guess they're both still alive.
Both still alive?
Okay. No, they're both in prison. Okay. You know, they are among the very small number of British prisoners that, you know, they get a sentence, but then when the end of the sentence comes up, they're like, nah, you can't get out.
Really? They did that to them?
Well, they give it what it's called a whole life tariff.
Right.
So it's like they can appeal and stuff like that, but the judge is like, nah.
Okay.
No. All right. So you're staying in there, buddy. So the first guy we're going to talk about, Peter Sutcliffe. Now, Peter Sutcliffe, they call him the Yorkshire Ripper. They gave him that appellation because at first, he had kind of a similar MO to Jack the Ripper. He largely targeted prostitutes at first, although that would change later on. And though he didn't necessarily, he didn't like take out their organs or anything like that, but he would generally pick his victims at random. And he did some pretty brutal shit. Like, he would usually bash in their heads with a hammer, and then he would, like, hack them up with a knife or with a screwdriver or something like that. And he would, step on them.
Now, when was
like
this?
This was the mid-70s.
Okay.
Although, they think, because the weird thing about the Yorkshire Ripper is that not only he ended up convicted of 12 or 13 murders. I can't remember. I think it was 12 or 13. But he also was accused of a lot of attempted murders because a lot of women got away.
All right.
And so they think that aside from all the murders and attempted murders that they know he did and that he confessed to, that there were probably a lot of other attacks, you know, that he never confessed to or that he was never charged with. I mean, because like I said, they threw him in prison forever. So it's not like, you know, charging him with other stuff later is going to make any difference.
Okay, so where are we going to start this?
Well, the first one that they know was him.
Okay.
Because it took a while for the women to actually, this is terrible, but it took a while for them to actually start getting killed. Like, at first, he started out, he actually started, the first one they know was him was 1969. And that was a prostitute that he had met. He was, like, in a van with his friend. And he went off and got a prostitute or something like that. And he hit her in the head with a rock, like in a sock.
Right.
Now, she didn't die. And she did report it to the police. Mm-hmm. Now, the police came to his house or in his friend's house and asked him about it. And he said, well, I did hit her, but I just hit her with my hand. And then the cop said, well, she didn't want to press charges because she was a prostitute and her husband was in jail for something else. And so he kind of got off with it.
Huh.
Now, the next ones that they...
So, hold on. So, the situation, she's just standing there trying to work a street corner, and he jumps up out of nowhere and just hits her with a sock.
Well, I think what had actually happened, he was looking for this other prostitute that had stolen his money, or so he claimed.
Okay.
And so, I guess he was looking for this other girl, and then he saw this other prostitute that I think he knew who the other girl was, so he went out to talk to her. And then I guess, hey, I think I'm just going to whack this woman in the head with the fuck. Because that was kind of his MO as it developed later. Mm-hmm. He would generally just pick a random woman, either a prostitute or someone just like walking home from work at night or something like that, and just walk up behind him and hit him with a fucking hammer.
Well, it's free.
It is that.
It's
is
free.
That.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything for that.
It doesn't cost anything for hitting women with hammers. I never thought about it that way, but you're right.
Well, that's the attitude he's going to have.
Right.
Yeah.
And the odd thing about him is that he didn't really, I mean, he didn't seem like a weird kid. He didn't seem like a totally normal person.
Well, how old was he when he started this?
He was like he had a job. He was married.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, he had worked.
You're talking about a guy in his
30s. Yeah, he had worked, you know, at different fucking, he worked as a truck driver, at the time of the murders, but he had worked as a grave digger before. Just, you know, regular working class kind of dude.
But do you know how old he was when he started it?
I'm not entirely sure. It was in 1969, so when was he born? He was born in 1946. So 1969 minus 1946. That was his first assault. Like I said, he didn't kill the woman. Right. Now, they know about that. So, but then there was a gap. Like the next assault didn't take place till 1975. So cops are kind of thinking that between 1969 and 1975, that there was probably a lot more random assaults that didn't get attributed to him. Maybe even murders that they never discovered.
Right.
You know what I mean? Shit like that. But in 1975, you know, he found another woman who was walking through, she was walking down the street or something like that. And he came up behind her, hit her with a hammer, and then slashed at her stomach with a knife. Now, a neighbor came out and was like, what's all that racket? And then he ran off. Okay, now she lived. And then a few months later, or actually just a month later, same kind of thing. This girl was a prostitute. She was walking, you know, walking through a park or walking down the street or whatever, struck her from behind with a hammer and then stabbed her. And he was interrupted again. She also lived. And then the next victim.
Now, there's no arrests happening. He's getting away?
No, he's getting away.
Okay.
Now, but the thing about this is, and this this will come up later, the Yorkshire Ripper case was like a huge deal in British jurisprudence because they had never attempted an investigation of this magnitude before. And you have to think that this is, you know, late 60s, early 70s. No computers.
Right.
Everything was on paper.
Right.
And this guy was whacking women with hammers. He was killing women in, you know, just a few months separated. And they had never experienced this this huge, like, you know, number of killings. And so they couldn't, the cops couldn't really handle it.
Right. He was overloading the system.
He was overloading the system. And sadly, you know, maybe not entirely to blame, obviously, because there was just so much paperwork. You know, things slipped through the cracks. You know, people got killed that maybe it would have been prevented if somebody would have cross-referenced a couple of different things. So, you know, it's kind of a shame. But, you know, the fact that so many of the early victims got away, you know, and reported. Now, some of them didn't report because they were prostitutes, obviously. They didn't want to get in trouble.
I thought that was legal in England.
No, well, it's not. No, not really.
No, it wasn't.
It's not really super criminalized.
Okay.
But,
it's more like a misdemeanor.
Yeah. But, it's, you know, some of them didn't want to get in trouble.
How the hell did he survive getting hit in the head with a hammer? He must have been whacking her.
Many of them did. Well, that's what I mean. The thing is, if somebody comes up behind you and hits you with a hammer, yeah, it's like
you'd think it would kill you instantly.
But if he just didn't get it quite right, or if she just like started,
maybe he wasn't really, maybe he was just trying to knock him out with a hammer.
Yeah,
wanted to kill him after he was done with him. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, maybe. But you know, so and then later that month, you know, that one woman got away. Her name was Olive Smelt, I believe. Or that was the one that happened in August. Then there was another one. And then later on that month, he attacked a 14-year-old girl.
She was a prostitute?
I don't think she was, actually.
Huh.
But she was just walking down a lane. And
target of opportunity.
Yeah. And like I said, even though a lot of his victims were prostitutes, I think in the end, he didn't really give a shit.
Right.
I think he just saw a woman walking by himself and said, yeah, I'm going to get that one. It didn't matter if it was a prostitute or not. Now, at first, I think because he was just attacking prostitutes, and this is terrible, but I think the public was just kind of like, ah, it's just prostitutes. It's not like they didn't give a shit, but people weren't like afraid because they said, well, I'm not a prostitute, so I'm fine.
Right.
But yeah, so he attacks his 14-year-old girl again, interrupted. He saw like car headlights coming and he ran off. Now this girl was struck 5 times in the head.
Damn.
She did live.
With a hammer?
Yes.
God damn.
But she had to, I mean, she had to have brain surgery, obviously.
Right.
At the time, he was actually not, this was actually not among the charges, like later when he was arrested. He just confessed to it later.
Oh, so he wasn't a suspect?
Not at that time.
Right, yeah. And this is happening all in the same general area?
Yeah, it's around, you know, around the Yorkshire area, the Leeds, you know, Manchester, some places like that.
So they had to have
known
this was a serial killer at this time, or an attempted serial killer.
Yeah, well, see, now, at this point, no one had died.
Right.
This was just kind of random attacks.
Right.
Now, 30th of October, 1975.
So that was like 5 women, didn't it? About 5 of them?
Yeah. Now, like I said, some of these they didn't know was him until later on.
Okay.
Like, because a lot of the timeline, you know, was, you know, that's hindsight.
Right, yeah.
You know, at the time, they didn't really know.
Right.
Although, like I said, some of the people have reported, and so they did have kind of, you know, sketches or photo fits of his face.
Okay.
So, October 30th, 1975, this was his first murder victim. Her name was William McCann. And she was a prostitute. She had four children. Now, here's the thing. At this time in Britain, you know, it was a time of economic depression and stuff like that. So a lot of working class women who wouldn't normally be prostitutes, I mean, some of them were married and stuff like that, right. But they were just trying to put food on the table. You know, their husbands were out of work or whatever. So sometimes they'd be
sometimes
like, well,
you got to turn them out.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. And it sucks, but that's what happens. So. So some of these women were, you know, in dire financial straits,
right.
And had turned to prostitution to make money to feed their kids or whatever. So Wilma McCann, she had four children. Now she, this was in Leeds, and Peter Sutcliffe actually hit her twice with a hammer on the head, and then he stabbed her 15 times, neck, chest, and abdomen.
Now, wait, hold on, I'm losing track. This is the very first one.
This is the one that the first one that was killed that they know of.
Okay, so what was the date again? 76?
30th of October, 1975.
75. Okay.
This was the first murder. Now. They did, now obviously since this was a murder, so now they bring in the big guns and they start, you know, doing a huge inquiry and stuff like that. They have thousands and thousands and thousands of interviews and they can't find them. Now, 1976, January, this is another murder. Now, this is another case of a woman. Her name was Emily Jackson and she
was. So this is a whole year later.
Yeah. Well, okay. No, this was the first murder was October 1975.
Okay,
the next one was January 1976. So it was only a few months. These were only a few. And actually, his assaults were only like a month or two apart.
Okay. So he's hell bent. He's going
pretty
out there.
Much.
He's going out there regularly.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty much. Yeah. So the next one, this is another situation. This was woman was, Emily Jackson. She was 42 years old. And, she was also married. They had children and that she was using the van to go out and turn tricks to make money, you know, to make money for the family. Now she was hit in the head also. She was stabbed 51 times with a screwdriver.
Damn.
And he also, stomped on her leg, which left a boot print.
Okay.
Which was a clue, you know, obviously. Now, so they knew that he wore a size 7 shoe.
Right.
You know, and like I said, because of the assaults, they kind of knew what he looked like. They knew that he was a dark-haired man, that he had a beard and a mustache and blah, blah, blah. Because some of the photo fits, if you see like some of the photo fits that the different people made, they do actually look a lot like him.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that it took so long to catch him is kind of sad. But like I said, 70s, understandable. They didn't have computers. So now the next woman didn't die. She wasn't a prostitute. She was just walking home from a party. And he, I guess, picked her up. She was hitchhiking or something like that. And he just picked her up and then he was going to kill her. So he beat her up but she lived. Now, but she did have a miscarriage. She was pregnant at the time.
Did she describe him?
Yes.
Okay.
And, so, you know, he's going on in this way, 1977, 1978, all this kind of shit. And it's just getting worse and worse. And like I said, some of them are prostitutes and some of them, he really fucked them up a lot. Now,
so how does she describe him?
Same thing. They described him as, they said he had, you know, a lot of dark hair, dark eyes, beard, mustache, you know.
Well, what kind of guy was he? I mean, is he kind of just a workman or a worker?
Yeah, he's
type?
Just a worker type.
Because he's using tools on him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he was a truck driver.
He's a truck driver.
He's a truck driver. So. You know, so he murdered a couple more prostitutes, mutilating them and stuff like that. Now, in June 1977, he killed a 16-year-old girl, not a prostitute. And then the whole area just went apeshit because
right.
They said before, you know, like I said, oh, I'm safe. I'm not a prostitute, blah, blah,
right.
blah. But this was just a teenage girl walking down the street or walking through a park or whatever. And when she got murdered, kind of all the stops got, you know, pulled out and stuff like that.
I think it's funny that he's doing this all in one area and they haven't been able to catch him or
ID. Like, it's a big area.
Is it?
You know, he kind of goes around, he goes, you know, Leeds, Manchester. So like, you know, these are big cities.
Right.
And like I said, most of the women he's attacking are prostitutes. So, you know, but this woman wasn't. Now, here's the thing. okay, let me get to the thing. Okay, so they had the boot print. They had tire tracks at some of the crimes. Now, at one of the crimes, what ended up happening was this one girl that he killed. Now, she wasn't found until 10 days after he killed her. She was found in a field somewhere. What had happened was he had given her a 5-pound note, you know, to paying for sex, which, wow, what a deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this was the 70s.
70s, yeah.
Sorry, that's terrible. Yeah. But then, like, after he killed her and left her, I guess he later thought, oh, that 5-pound note could be traced back to me. So he went back to the scene to try and find it and take it back. Except she had put it, like, I guess she put it in, like, this secret compartment in her purse, and her, I don't know where her purse went. And so he couldn't find it. So for some reason, he just mutilated the body and then moved it somewhere else.
Huh.
But they did eventually find it. But
he mutilated, what, he tried to prevent ID?
Yeah, he tried to cut her head off and stuff like that. I think he was trying to make the MO a little bit different so people wouldn't necessarily suspect it was all the same guy.
How do you trace a 5-pounder?
But they did.
They did?
Here's what happened. So the authorities did find this 5-pound note.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because they have serial numbers,
uh-huh,
he's like, well, they traced it to, that it had been in someone's wage packets. Like, okay, you know, it came from a certain, it came from the Bank of England. Uh-huh. It came to the certain area, the bank, to pay, you know, the wages,
okay,
of X amount, of these amount of companies.
Okay.
So they narrowed it down to 8,000 people who could have received this 5-pound note,
right,
in their pay packet.
Huh.
And he was on that list.
Yeah.
And they did interview him.
Right.
But he had alibis. You know, his wife stuck up for, oh, he was here all night. Right. You know, we were at a housewarming party or whatever.
Right.
So the sad thing is that over the course of the years that this fucking guy is doing this, the police interviewed him 9 times.
Huh.
9 times.
Man.
And later on, like after, but like I said, they didn't have any computers. If you look, there's a couple documentaries about it, and it's fucking fascinating. They still have like all the paperwork, right?
Wow.
There was so much paperwork from this case that they had to reinforce the floors
in
the
place.
It was like 600,000 index cards.
Damn.
They were writing tips and writing information down on these little index cards and then filing them alphabetically. They had like all these police ladies like doing it. And so, like I said, in a way, it's not surprising that it took so long.
Damn.
Because they had so many tips. And here's another thing that happened. And this is probably the saddest thing of all. You know, toward the end of his reign of terror, the police received a tape. And it purported to be from the Ripper.
Uh-huh.
So this guy's on the tape saying, you know, you guys are no closer to catching me and blah, blah, blah. You know, just like the Ripper, he was taunting the police. Right. And he sent letters and stuff as well.
Okay.
Now, in one of the letters, he claimed that he had killed this other woman. He said, oh, you guys think it's 7 victims, but really it's 8. Mm. And he took credit for this other murder that they didn't know that they hadn't associated with him. So now here's the thing. The cops were torn. Some of the cops were convinced the guy on the tape, that's him.
Right.
And we need to follow this lead. Now, some of the cops were like, I don't think that's him. I think it's a hoax.
Right.
But in the end, sadly, they went with the cops that thought it was really him.
Uh-huh. It was a hoax.
Yeah. And the problem was they started calling him Worside Jack because of the accent.
Uh-huh.
They narrowed the accent down to a very particular town called Castletown in Sunderland. And so, you know, this town that they thought he came from was only 5,000 people. So they went to that town. They played the tape for everybody that lived there. They said, anybody know this guy? Who is this? And stuff like that. They couldn't find anybody that knew him and all this other kind of shit. And it was just, it diverted the investigation for ages and ages.
Hmm.
And it wasn't him.
No,
okay. It was some guy named John Humble, just some drunk.
Drunk guy.
Now that guy got 8 years in prison.
For doing that?
For doing that. Because that shit's not funny, yo.
Yeah.
Because of that diversion,
three
more women got killed.
All right.
Because they were going down the wrong alley. Which, like I said, what can you do? What if it was him? It could have been him.
Right.
But it wasn't. See, because they thought the guy on the tape has a Geordie accent, but, you know, the real guy did not talk like that.
Damn.
So that's why. And also, one of the letters that this freak sent they got a little bit of saliva off the stamp.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have DNA then, but they could blood type it.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, he has a really rare blood type. Only 6% of the population have that. Right? So, and they thought that the blood type matched, like, some of the evidence from some of the other shit. And there was also a thing where one of the women that got away asked him about, like, what type of car the guy was driving, and she misidentified the car.
Okay.
So there was a lot of things that conspired.
Yeah.
This guy not getting caught. But like I said, they did interview him 9 times. They interviewed him about the 5-pound note. They interviewed him about, you know, various things about the car and stuff like that. But they
They eventually pin it to him?
Well, what ended up happening, and here's the funny thing too. I was watching a documentary about it. And they said they had showed like photo fits, like I said, from the women that got away. And in retrospect, they look almost exactly like him. They were very good, you know, photo fits. And they interviewed his brother on there. Uh-huh. And he said, when I saw one of the photo fits on TV, it's like, oh, that looks just like my brother, Peter Sutcliffe.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, that's funny. And then he was like joking with Peter Sutcliffe, like, hey, that looks just like you. You're probably like, and he's like, yeah. And then the brother said, man, if they catch that guy, I should cut his balls off. And then he said, and then my brother got really upset and like but he's like, I still didn't put it together. Cause you don't think your brother's a serial killer, you know? But anyway, what ended up happening was in, 1981. So he'd killed people like all this time, killing, assaulting, whatever. And 1981, he was pulled over by the police. He had a prostitute in his car. And they pulled him over like on this waste ground or whatever. And then the cops ran his plates and discovered that the plates were not the plates that were registered to that car.
Switch those plates around.
Right. So they were going to arrest him. Now, he said, oh, I got to go take a leak.
Yeah.
So the cops were like, okay. So he went around the corner and took a leak, and then he came back, and then they took him to the police station. Now, the cops went back to the scene the next day.
Yeah.
And they found that when he had gone to take a leak, he had dumped a hammer, a rope, and a screwdriver, like, behind the wall.
Damn.
So then they were like, oh, he must be the Yorkshire Ripper.
Right.
And they were so fucking happy that they finally caught this motherfucker. But like I said, it was so sad that all of this time, they had interviewed him. He had been interviewed so many times, and they just never caught him. Sad now, when they got to, this is kind of a weird detail, too. Now, it's not real clear. Because, like, already the Wikipedia page and stuff like that. Now, some sources say that he raped the women, and some don't really mention it. However, a book came out in 2003 about the case, and they said that when Peter Sutcliffe was brought in and they knew that he was the Ripper and they stripped him, underneath his clothes, he was wearing a V-neck sweater, except he was wearing it upside down, like, so the legs... the sleeves, so like there'd be a V-neck like right where his cock was.
Yeah, so he could pop it out.
So he could pop it out easily, I suppose. And then also the knees were reinforced like with padding.
Okay, that way he could climb around if he struggled.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. So, you know, a little weird.
That's so he could rape and comfort.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. What a freak. So anyway... So they finally caught this motherfucker, right?
Rape technology.
Right? Yeah. What the fuck? It's very simple rape technology. Oh my God. This dude is fucking crazy. So he gets, so he finally gets arrested. Like finally caught the Yorkshire after all these years, after all this fucking stress. And like I said, if you see the news footage of them transferring him in the van and just the whole, like all these fucking, you know, Yorkshire people, they're all like these workers that are just like screaming, die, you fucking bastard. Blah, blah, blah. They're all like screaming, you know, it's like, you fucking, so it's like, they're all just screaming at the van. I just thought that was very funny. Now, so he got arrested for, he gets charged with 13 charges of murder. Now he tried to pull the diminished responsibility thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And like, he seemed like he was kind of trying to go for a little crazy. He's like, oh, well, I killed all these women because when I was a grave digger, God spoke to me through one of the gravestones and told me that I needed to rid the world of prostitutes because, and I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, bullshit.
So the judge and stuff was like, nah, man, no.
So is this guy a little Weasley guy like Gary Ridgway or is he?
No, he's a pretty normal looking, like working class kind of big dude. And like I said, he was a truck driver and shit like that. So, trial only lasted 2 weeks and they're just like, yeah, nah. And, they're not going to let him out. And also, this might make everyone happy, but he has been in prison he's been in prison. He transferred to the hospital for a while. He was at Broadmoor Hospital for the criminally insane or whatever. And then they put him back in prison. He has had his ass kicked by other prisoners so many times.
Like you do.
Like you do. Like, yeah. No, I mean, like other prisoners tried to kill him. Right, he was blinded in one eye. By one prisoner who fucking stabbed him. Mm. Yeah, he's been stabbed and beat up, and it's like there's pictures on the internet. If you look, his face is all fucked up and everything like that. But, you know, like I said, they're never going to let this motherfucker out. Yeah. And they have no idea why he did it. You never know, really. They said he was kind of, you know, sources are unclear. Some friends of his said, oh, he was kind of had a fascination with prostitutes, or he visited prostitutes. Or he had a thing about, like, voyeurism, like he would like to like follow dudes with prostitutes and like watch them. Huh. But other people said, nah, not so much. And it's like he seemed in a lot of ways like just kind of a normal working class dude. And just all of a sudden, I'm just going to start hitting women with hammers and stabbing
whether
them.
They were hookers or not.
Yeah. And like I said, he started to
identify him. He goes, oh, that must be a hooker. Boom. She's out here.
Yeah. In the end, I think he didn't really care if she was a hooker or not. He figured if a woman was walking around by herself, then just hit her. Because
it was free.
It
was free.
Like you said, it was free. But yeah, so he's actually still alive, but he got beat up a lot in prison, which, you know, no one feels bad about that. And I really don't think they're ever going to let him out, I don't imagine.
Nah.
But sad thing is much later, his original friend that he had been with the first time when he hit the prostitute with the rock.
Yeah.
That friend had actually written a letter to the police in like 1979 or 1980.
Yeah.
And said, I think I know who's doing all this.
That dude right there.
And here it is. Here's his name. Here's his address and everything like that. But it got filed and lost. You know. Yeah. And yeah, it was quite a shame. And, there was actually the police department. You know, if you watch interviews with the guys now, they feel super bad about it. Cause like, you know, of course you do.
Yeah.
Especially those last three women who they think probably wouldn't have gotten killed if they had gotten their shit together. But, you know, like I said, it sucks, but
well, I never heard
there
of this
wasn't
one.
Much they could have done.
Yeah.
You know,
I've never heard of this one.
No computers, no cross-referencing. Yeah. It's, you know, and they had so many leads and so many tips and so many hoaxers and stuff like that. So anyway,
that's the Yorkshire Ripper.
That's the Yorkshire Ripper.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. So One of England's most prolific serial killers.
Okay.
And so now we're going to take a break. And after the break, we're going to talk about the fucking freakazoid known as Dennis Nielsen.
I don't know this one either.
Okay. Well, brace yourself.
All right. This one better be good.
Because there's more.
This one better be good.
You're going to get mad again. You're going to get mad again. Okay. Promise? Okay. Yeah. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
How do people who make stuff up for a living make stuff up?
New York Times bestseller Jonathan Mayberry told us.
Oprah's book club favorite Sue Miller told us.
You know, you sort of take a character and make some bad things happen.
How'd we get them to do that?
We colored them, just like at a cocktail party, except through your headphones.
Join us every Thursday for the Liars Club Oddcast.
A slightly unhinged podcast where storytellers interview other storytellers.
Available on Project Entertainment Network, iTunes, and everywhere podcasts are heard.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. SubcultureCorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
Bizong! It's Bizong, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, hosted by me, Mr. Frank. Bizong is the showcase podcast of the bizarro fiction genre. And those who write weird and read weird are going to love this podcast, where each week we talk to everyone who is anyone in the bizarre and weird fiction realm. So join us here every Monday, presented exclusively by Project Entertainment Network.
Hollow Earth, graphic design by Jenny Ashford. Specializing in posters and flyers. Special rates for bands and artists. Quick turnaround times. Books and CD covers. Consultations through email, or Skype. Logos and packaging. Payment through PayPal. Ads and promo materials. Satisfaction guaranteed. Visit the Facebook page at Hollow Earth Design or email hecate80@hotmail.com.
All right, we're back talking about British serial killers. Now, this half of the show was probably a lot less pleasant than not like the first half was pleasant. But yeah, so this guy.
I don't know, Yorkshire Ripper's kind of standard to me. That is a lot like the
Jack the Ripper, yeah.
Kind of like Jack the Ripper, but he evidently wasn't cutting him up as bad.
Yeah.
Right. And but the hammer thing, that's
weird. And like I said, it doesn't seem like he didn't really have a motive, really. And he just seemed like a regular dude, and he's just like, oh, I'm just going to suddenly, yeah.
Just an asshole.
Yeah, just an asshole.
Yeah.
Now this guy, okay, Dennis Nielsen.
Okay.
This guy had a little bit more, not a super weird childhood, but, you know, he was kind of, you know, a quiet kid, whatever. And he actually part Norwegian. His dad was Norwegian and his mom was Scottish. So he was born in a little remote area of Scotland and was real close to his grandfather. His grandfather was a fisherman, so he grew up around fishing boats and shit like that. Now, his grandfather died when Dennis was 6 years old. And later he claimed that his grandfather dying, he had a heart attack when he was out on a fishing boat. And they brought the body back and put it in a big box and put it in the house. And Dennis said that his mother, you know, said to him, oh, there's your grandfather. He's sleeping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he thinks that this was kind of the point where love and death kind of became one thing, like in his mind. But he says he's not really sure. He doesn't seem super, like if you can watch interviews or something like that, and he is totally creepy. But he's creepy because, I know this is going to sound weird to say, but he's creepy because almost not creepy. Because he seems normal and very matter of fact.
Yeah.
And he also doesn't really seem to have much insight into his own behavior. He's just like, I don't know. You guys should figure that out. I don't know why I do it.
You're weird. Okay.
And also, and I think too that he wanted to get caught.
Okay.
It seemed like.
All right. Well, tell us the story.
Now, the way he, let's work from the way he got caught and then we'll work backwards. Because he'd been doing it for several years, between about the end of 1978 and, beginning of 1983, which was when he got caught.
Now, what was up with the 70s?
See, that's what, you don't really...
We were alive in the 70s. It was a weird time, but
there were so many serial killers.
Yeah.
It seems like all your big ticket serial killers...
70s and 80s.
Like, yeah, late 60s to early 80s. Yeah. You don't really see that type of shit anymore.
No.
Maybe because it's so much easier to catch people now. Like, you can catch them before they go on to do that
internet,
kind of crap.
The internet, interconnectivity between people somehow released some of the pressure.
Maybe, because like back then it seemed like...
There was too much isolation.
And I think that might have happened too a little bit in Dennis Nielsen's case because he was gay.
Okay.
Or maybe bisexual, I'm not real sure.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a super sexual person.
Bisexual?
But
you buy him something, he feels sexual?
Yeah, we're all like that.
Something wrong, get sexual real quick.
But yeah. But I mean, he... you know, he was an unremarkable child, really. When he left school at 16 and he joined the army, he was in the army for 11 years.
All right.
And he trained as a cook.
All right.
Actually, as a butcher.
All right.
Which would help him later on.
Okay.
And then after he got out of the army, he actually joined the police force.
Okay.
Although he was only in for about a year.
All right.
For some reason, he really liked regimentation.
All right, yeah.
You know, which I guess a lot of these kind of guys do. And
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, not like that.
You better not be a serial killer. Don't you confess right now if you are. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I loved it. I loved the army.
Yeah. But so, and then after he left the police force, he got a job at a job center, like helping people get jobs. So he was a civil servant, basically. Now, how he ended up getting caught, because let's go and then we'll work backwards, because this is pretty fucking gross. He lived in this, it's actually a really nice house. There's still pictures of it, but it had been divided into like, several different flats. Now he lived in the attic flat and people started to complain that the drains in the house were all backed up. Like, you, nothing would drain, and there was this really, really horrible smell.
I'm getting a bad feeling.
So somebody called and complained. The drain guy came out, and when they went down there, they found, like, all these chunks of stuff, in the drain.
Yeah, I think I remember this story.
Didn't initially know what it was. But they said when they saw it, they said it didn't look good. So they called the cops.
Isn't this the one where it was a pipe coming out from the top floor running down the side of
the house? Yes, yes, yes.
I remember seeing this. Yeah. I don't remember all the details, but I remember that.
So, yeah, so they found chunks and they thought it looked suspicious.
And it was all white.
Yeah.
They said it was all white. Yeah.
And so they called the cops. And the cops came. And the cops said, yeah, that's human tissue. They also found some human bone fragments and things like that. And they said, now, from where the blockage was, they said the only place this could be coming from is someone on the top floor flushing this down the toilet.
Right.
So they go up to the top floor. They wait for Dennis to come home from work.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, we want to talk to you about your drains.
Uh-huh.
And he says, oh, I didn't know the police were interested in drains.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, well, we found human tissue in there. And he goes, oh, that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cop is like, where's the rest of the body?
Yeah.
And Dennis doesn't even, he's like, oh, it's in bags in the wardrobe next door, like in his bedroom. Yeah. Like he was totally calm.
Yeah.
And shit like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, you're under arrest, buddy.
I remember this one.
And the funny thing, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that, so they go in his room and they find the wardrobe and it just smells awful.
They said
it smelled awful in there, just like fucking death, obviously. And they open these big bags. There's fucking, what do you call them? What are those air freshener things?
Yeah.
There's like air freshener stacked.
Yeah, that's going to help.
Oh my God.
God damn.
And so they open the bags.
Gallon of Febreze on some shit like that. And it wouldn't make a difference.
I know. But, so they open these bags and there's just pieces of people in there. So after they found that, so they're questioning Dennis and they couldn't tell because the bodies were all cut up. They couldn't tell how many people it was.
Right.
So at first, they just thought it was one or two people. So they asked him, okay, Dennis, how many people are we talking about? Is it one or two? And Dennis just very calmly says, oh, I think it's 14 or 15, actually. And they're just like, what?
Damn. So those body parts must have been in there for a long time.
Well, see, what happened was he had only lived in that upper flat.
Yeah.
For a little while at that point. Now, before that.
Now, no one else in this apartment could smell this?
They did.
All right.
But they had kind of been convinced, oh, it must just be like something's wrong with the sewer or something like that. Like they didn't, you know, nobody thinks their upstairs neighbor is like cutting people off.
Well, the thing is that decomposing flesh has a fucking
smell. It does
have
a very distinct smell.
You know
smell.
That's a dead animal.
Yeah.
Well, are people that naive, that dumb?
I don't know.
You know that that's not rotten garbage.
But yeah.
You know it's not sewage smell.
Yeah.
I know what dead things smell like. Maybe people don't know what.
Well, I thought everybody knew what dead people smell like. I know what dead people smell like.
It's not dead people. You know, it's just dead animals.
Dead animals smell like that. They all smell like that. Yeah, it's very distinct odor. But yeah, like I said, so what ended up happening, he had only lived in this flat for a short time. And he had killed three people in this flat.
Okay.
But prior to that, he had lived in another house, and he was totally forthcoming. Like, he totally told the cops, yeah, you probably want to check out my old address.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kind of bodies
in
the garden there, although he had burned a lot of them.
Right.
So here was his modus operandi. Dennis Nielsen, like I said, he was a gay guy, and he would kind of go to clubs and he would pick up, you know, random strays.
Yeah.
A lot of them were homeless, you know, drug addicts, things like that.
He probably made sure of their background first, probably.
Not always.
Not always, okay.
I don't think he was really that picky.
It's just whatever he could get.
Although, it should be said that some of his victims have never been identified.
Okay.
They did manage to identify some of them because some of them he didn't know what their names were or he only knew their first names, or he's like, oh, that was just, you know, the guy from Glasgow. I don't really know his name or anything like that. What he would do is he would go kind of cruise in the bars.
Yeah.
And he would pick up, you know, a young, pretty man, and he would say, and especially ones that didn't have a place to stay.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, come stay around my flat or whatever. Right. And he would be nice to them. He would like, you know, give them drinks. He would let them listen to music. He would cook them food.
How old is he when he's doing this?
This was, now he was a bit older. He was 38 when he was arrested. Okay,
so he was 30s, 40s. Okay. Yeah.
And stuff. So, and then he would bring them home. Now, the weird thing about him, now what he would usually do, he made like a ligature, usually out of a tie. He also had like a tie with a piece of rope. And he would get them drunk, strangle them. See, his thing was he wasn't super into killing them. Like, he didn't get any pleasure out of actually killing them. He just wanted their bodies to stay with him.
So it sounds like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, he's like the British Jeffrey Dahmer. That's what he's considered. And actually, the book that was written about him is called Killing for Company. And that's actually the name of the song that I'm going to put at the end, too, by the Swans, because it's about him. But so it seems like, because he had boyfriends at the time, but it almost seems like that he didn't have a lot of real successful relationships.
Right.
And I think he had kind of resigned himself to the fact that he was always going to get abandoned.
Right.
So he would kind of pick up these really young, pretty boys that didn't really have anywhere else to go.
Sounds just like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, and he didn't want them to leave him.
Right.
So what he would do is he would get them drunk, he would strangle them. If they were still alive, he would drown them in the tub, and then he would wash them in the tub. Sometimes he would get in the tub with them and hang out.
Damn.
And then he would put them in his bed, and he would sleep with them. Now, he says that he never actually penetrated them, like sexually penetrated them.
Right.
Although what he would either masturbate over the bodies.
Damn.
Or he would kind of like stick his dick in between their thighs and rub one out that way.
Damn.
You know what I mean? So he would do that kind of stuff. Damn. Now, obviously, after a while, the bodies would start to decompose.
Okay.
At which point he would usually cut them up, because like I said, he was a butcher, so he was very good at that. He would cut them up and he would put them under the floorboards. And some of the bodies that they found in his first residence had been in there for like a year and a half.
Damn.
Like, had been under the floorboards. Now, sometimes after a while, he would drag the bodies out, because in his first residence, he had exclusive use of the back garden.
Mm-hmm.
So he would drag them out to the garden and he would put them on a pyre, and then he would put tires on top of it just so to mask the smell when it burned. You know what I mean? So you would just smell burning rubber.
Well, damn, where do you live?
I don't know, England somewhere.
You start burning tires, it makes a lot of black smoke. That would attract a lot of attention. Why don't they just bury these things? These guys can.
Well, then what he would do then was that he would burn it and then he would crush up the bones that were left. Now, after police caught him, they found over thousands of bone fragments in his yard of the first house. Now, see what happened was when he moved. This is why I'm saying I think he wanted to get caught.
Right.
Because when he moved from his ground floor flat to the attic flat, he didn't have access to a garden anymore. So it's like not easy to hide bodies. So he thought to himself, and he said this to the police. He said, I hoped that would make me stop.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And because like I said, once the police caught him, he was just kind of like, oh, guess you got me. And he was very forthcoming.
Huh.
He wrote pages and pages of stuff, like trying to help them, like trying to remember, like trying to identify the people. Right. He's like, I'm sorry, I can't remember all their names. And he's like, he looked like this, he had this tattoo or whatever. And it's like, so, and he did tell the investigating officer, he's like, if you guys hadn't caught me, it wouldn't have just been 15 murders. It would have been 150.
Right.
I couldn't stop myself, he said.
Huh.
And it was weird because, like I said, he had a regular life. He had a regular job. He had, you know.
It's some weird shit, though. I don't understand how these guys can keep something that's dead around for that amount of time.
He was just into it. He thought dead.
He liked dead stuff.
He liked dead bodies. Ugh. He thought they were beautiful.
And when they started getting rotten, he liked that.
Well, not really. Here's the weird thing, too, because when they started getting rotten, sometimes, if he still had them.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he would get rid of them periodically.
Yeah.
If they were still rotten, like if it was a particularly nice looking specimen, he would like put makeup
on
over the rotting parts.
Okay,
so it would look better.
That's it, man. No.
Also, I forgot to mention too, that when he moved to the attic apartment and he had a harder time.
He kept them rotten. He kept rotten ones. He was having sex with rotten ones.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
I told you. I warned you.
Why are you doing this to me?
I warned you. I also forgot to mention that when he moved to the attic flat and he had to, you know, dispose of the bodies, by cutting them up into little pieces and flushing them down the toilet, which is how he ended up getting caught because the drains were backed up. He would also cut off their heads and boil their heads in a pot on the stove to get to separate the flesh so he could pull the flesh apart and pull it and down the toilet.
Damn.
So, you know. And, yeah. And, you know, I'm very sorry about all this necrophiliac stuff. Man. I didn't realize. It's like, we wanted to do another serial killer show, and I said, oh, we'll do these
British. He's boiling and cooking rotten heads.
Yeah.
And then he's touching them.
Yeah. Ugh, man. Now, here's another thing. This is why, like I said, they made a documentary about him called The Kindly Killer. And this is why. Because some of his victims got away.
Yeah.
Because he let them go.
Okay.
There's one guy.
And he didn't tell?
Well, no, what ended up happening, after they caught him, they discovered a guy, I think his name was Daniel Stoddard. I think he was the one. Mm-hmm. Now, he had been, he got picked up by Dennis Nielsen. Mm-hmm. They went back to their apartment, they were drinking and stuff like that. And he's like, and I fell asleep. And when I woke up, he was trying to strangle me. Mm-hmm. Now, he, you know, it knocked him out, but it didn't kill him. He said, when I next woke up, he was, he had me over the tub and he was trying to drown me.
Right.
Right. And he went unconscious again, but he didn't die. Uh-huh. So Dennis thought he was dead. Uh-huh. And he puts the kid in his bed, mm-hmm, and he falls asleep next to what he thinks is the dead kid.
All right.
Now the kid wakes up.
Yeah.
And then the craziest thing is that he wakes up and then Dennis wakes up and he realizes the kid is still alive, uh-huh, and he doesn't kill him.
Yeah.
He, like, nurses him back to health and then lets him go.
Shit.
And
what was his explanation?
I don't know.
He felt bad, right?
I guess he just felt bad. Because, like I said, it seemed like, and later he said that, and like I said, this doesn't
what
excuse
are these,
it.
What are these dudes going to this guy's house for with all that stinky smell in there and everything, all the dead bodies? They're not suspicious? They're not like,
hey, I don't know. Well, some of them, I guess, yeah.
Maybe they need the drugs. They need the drugs.
Or they need the money, or they need the food, or they need a place to stay. Because like I said, a lot of them were homeless. And one of the saddest ones, I think it was a guy named Malcolm. He was a drug addict, and he had kind of, he had blacked out, like, in front of Dennis's apartment.
Yeah.
And so Dennis took him in and gave him food and all this other stuff. And then he let him go. Like, he, you know, he's like, oh, you know, have a good time or whatever. Yeah. And Malcolm came back to the house later to thank him. Uh-huh. And then he killed him.
Damn.
And I was like, man, that is fucking ice cold.
Dude.
But then some of the people he let go.
Nice.
So it's almost kind of like he had this weird thing. And like I said, whenever they interviewed him, he just seems very calm. And he almost seems not confused, really, but he doesn't really know why he does it. He's almost just kind of like, and like I said, he's like, I just can't stop doing it. I don't know what, you know. And he's like, and I don't get any pleasure out of killing them. That's right. Why he tries to do it. And he was very insistent that he's like, you know, I killed them quickly. They didn't feel anything. Right. You know, they were drunk.
Sounds like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. So I think it was more a case of he had like these crazy, weird, one, he had like a weird necrophile type of thing. I think he liked having power over something that couldn't fight back, and he also liked having something that couldn't leave him.
Right.
Because they said some of the bodies, he would like leave them in his apartment. He would talk to them like they were a real person and shit like that. And he would keep them under the floorboards and then bring them back out and talk to them and sleep next to them and stuff like that. So he's fucking messed up. So, you know, his trial was in 83, and he was actually charged with 6 counts of murder, 2 charges of attempted murder. He actually killed, they think, between 12 and 15 people, but some of them they could not identify.
Right.
And because, you know, the parts were all cut up and there were no records and stuff like that. So they're not really sure.
Right.
But, you know, that was enough.
Well, that's a good one.
To convict him. Yeah.
I've actually, I saw a little bit of this case on television.
Yeah, I think we did watch a documentary.
It was a weird case.
And it was the same kind of thing where at the trial, he tried to argue just like the Yorkshire Ripper did, that diminished responsibility. Like, I would get drunk and I would go, you know, I didn't really know. He didn't say he didn't know what he was doing.
I don't know why these guys try these defenses.
But well, I guess that's all they can do because he'd already confessed. He said, yeah, I killed him.
He'd already confessed. He's going to get life. He's in England. They're not going to give him the death penalty. I don't think they have the death penalty there. So why even fight it? I don't know why, you know.
I mean, the thing, you're going to
prison.
You're
not getting out. You might as well just go,
It's like you're either going, and really.
You might as well just man up. Yeah, I did that shit. I did that shit and it was cool. You know what I mean?
But like I said, the creepiest thing, and actually at the beginning of the show, I played like a little bit of, his... Oh, and actually, shit. I also had the fucking... You know what I did?
What'd you do?
I forgot. When we were doing the part of the Yorkshire Ripper,
yeah,
I actually had audio of that tape. The fake guy's tape that they sent to the thing, and I was going to
play. Oh, yeah. Well, you put it in there.
Well, I'll put it at the end.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of the show, that voice at the beginning, that was Dennis Nielsen. Okay. And like I said, it's very creepy the way, you know, that he's just very matter of fact about, because they were like, well, wasn't there a lot of blood and stuff like that? He's like, well, you know, by the time I cut him up, you know, they were usually had been dead a while, so it wasn't as much blood as you would think. Well, but he also would like cover the floor with plastic and stuff like that, and he would take all his clothes off so he didn't.
Right.
So, you know, he was thinking ahead, I guess. But, I know. And, you know, it's kind of gross. Is like, you know, the pot that he used to like boil the heads and stuff like that. It's in, there's in Scotland. There's something called the Black Museum, you know? The Scotland Yard.
That same pot that he'd boil the heads in, would he use that pot for cooking?
You know what? I don't know.
I bet you he did.
He probably did.
Fucking asshole.
I know, so fucking gross. He's such a fucking weirdo. But yeah, so they kind of tried to say
these dudes don't have any sanity,
diminished responsibility or something like that. But
totally unsanitary.
But the judge was kind of, again, the judge was like, nah, you're not getting away with that.
Totally unsanitary.
So that guy went to prison and
fuck him.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. He's fucking
fuck them both. I don't care about that. Wrap this shit up, man. Okay. No, I'm getting mad again.
All right. Well, okay. Well, luckily it's the end of the show. I told you this was going
to
happen.
No, whenever.
Okay, but before
it takes time for it to take its toll on me. You know what I'm talking about? I start thinking about it, and the ramifications and the impact of it. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, I start glitching out. I don't like that, man. I don't like that at all.
I know.
They're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Sorry. But anyway, well, I'm sure there was a lot of other, and like I said, okay, what I'm going to do right now, like I'll do the end
do
part.
Some.
Do some.
Do
okay,
some.
Shut up.
Okay, hold on.
So I'll do the end part right now. And then before, like, I wanted to play like that, that fake Yorkshire Ripper tape.
Go ahead, play it.
Cause what, so I'll play that. And then after that, like I said, our musical interlude.
Play it.
Our musical interlude is going to be from actually one of my favorite bands. You don't like them, but one of my favorite bands, Swans.
I like
and,
some Swans.
And they wrote a song actually called Killing for Company, and it is about Dennis Nielsen.
Let it roll.
Some people think that it's about Jeffrey Dahmer, but it's not. It's about Dennis Nielsen.
Okay.
So I'm just going to play a couple minutes of that. And so I guess that'll do it for this episode before he gets to...
Yeah, I'm getting mad.
He's getting
bye-bye.
Mad. So anyway, if you like the show, please go to the Project Entertainment Network Patreon and give them a buck or two. They have a lot of cool podcasts on there too. If you like our YouTube show, then please subscribe to our channel, 13 O'Clock Podcast, and go, you know, follow us on Twitter and go like our Facebook page, which are also called 13 O'Clock Podcast. And now we're going to hear from the fake Yorkshire Ripper, and then we're going to hear from Swans talking about Dennis Nielsen. And then that'll be the end of the show. So hope you guys liked this disgusting episode. Bye.
I'm Jack. I see you are still having no luck catching me. I have the greatest respect for you, George. But Lord, you are no nearer catching me now than 4 years ago when I started. I reckon your boys are letting you down, George. They can't be much good, can they?
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.